Hello, my name is Debbie Boone, and I want to welcome you to my podcast, The Bend, where we explore how successful people navigated the path and emerged in a better place when life threw them an unexpected twist. It's inspired by one of my favorite sayings, "The bend in the road is not the end of the road unless you fail to make the curve." These conversations will hopefully help you and inspire you to embrace your personal bend and to flourish. I hope you enjoy it, and if you need help with your own personal navigation and you're in veterinary medicine, please feel free to reach out to me at Debbie Boone, 2ManageVets Consulting. Enjoy the bend and be inspired by our wonderful guest. Welcome. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of The Bend. Now, today is kind of unique because I am bringing back a former guest, Dr. Sarah Wooten. Sarah, as you may or may not know, is a 2002 graduate of UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. She practiced for 16 years in private practice. She had a little burnout episode that she's kind of made famous in our world. And she now is talking about and writing about and providing news bites and CE courses and all those good things to help veterinary professionals deal with the profession of veterinary medicine. So she's got a new bend in her road today, and we're going to talk a little bit about what she's got going on, because it's new and interesting, a little bit crazy, but that never stopped either her or I from jumping into the fire. So welcome, Sarah.
Debbie, thank you so much for having me again. I was just so thrilled that you were willing to have me back on again to kind of talk about some new crazy stuff going on in my world. And you are always such a beautiful light to our profession. It is a privilege and an honor to be here with you.
Oh, well, thank you. That kind of does my ego good, and I appreciate that. The best I can with what I have to work with. How about that? So Sarah, speaking of, I mean, you certainly have made an impact on the profession and talking about your experiences and the challenges and overcoming a lot of the things that we talk about a lot is the mental health of veterinary professionals. So tell me now, this latest iteration of how you plan to help us again.
Well, so as you guys know, I mean, we've been making these games for years, right? The Vets Against Insanity games. You probably have a couple of them, maybe this guy from a couple of years ago, or, you know, maybe the new guy, or the yellow vet tech one, which came out this last year. And I know that you guys have them because I see you buying them every single week, right? So I see you buying them. So I know that they're out there and I know that you're playing. When we first created the Vets Against Insanity game, it was originally created as a tool for to help people learn in some veterinary CE sessions at the Fetch conferences back in 2017, right? And so since then we've been making the games, and we kind of put one out, you know, just about every year. And it's funny because now I go back and I look at the games and I'm like, wow, this is a time capsule, right? Of what happened last year. And things are changing so rapidly, like we have to, you know, switch things up. And so as we all know, right, we went through like probably the worst psychological trauma of all of our lifetimes, starting in 2020, right? Would you agree?
It's like, I looked back at it and I said, no wonder everybody is just twitchy. And it's all I can say, it's just twitchy. We're all fractious and twitchy because we had the pandemic that trapped us in the house, right? And those of us who did get out were inundated by the people who were out. We had civil unrest. We have a war that launched. We now have inflation that's kicking us. We're like, what else can happen here? And really, no wonder we're just emotionally exhausted.
Absolutely. There was a time for a while, like I just woke up and I was like, what new shit show is going to show up today? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And it showed up and I was like, there it is. No surprise here. More human fuckery. Yay. Sorry. I have corporal language. You might have to meow me out a little bit. So anyways, it got so bad for me. I literally, you know, I'm not gonna filter anything. Like there was a time where I was like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. You know, I don't know. This is such a struggle every single day. This isn't fun. I don't know how much more fun life, you know, if there's going to be fun again. And so, you know, I just kept soldiering on, you know, kind of conferences started coming back. And I just thought, you know, I don't know if I want to do things the same way anymore, because we've all gone through this massive shift. What is something new that I and, you know, my co-conspirators in crime could bring to the profession? And what I knew was that every time I had seen people play the game, I had seen people come in with literal perma frowns on their face, you know, and about 15 minutes into the game, something would come over them and they would start laughing. And then I would see perfect strangers connecting around the game. I would see people crying. I had people emailing me all the time, people that I didn't think would like the game at all. And I'm not going to name any names, but they were like, I just played your game with my staff and I have never laughed so hard. Thank you so much. And so I thought, okay, that's something that we're good at, right? We're good at making people laugh and we're good at helping people connect. And then last fall, I was down at Ameristar in Blackhawk. So I live in Colorado, right? And about 45 minutes from my house, I'm up in the mountains. There's this teeny tiny little mining town that's turned into a tiny little Las Vegas, tiny. And so we were down there and I actually gave a live talk last September for the Animal Welfare Association, and I gave it in their ballroom. And I was standing there giving the talk and I thought, well, what if I rented this ballroom and had an event, right? So I just started thinking about it and I thought, how can I help this profession? I feel like I can help this profession by providing them an event where they can get their high quality CE, right? Of course, that has to be part of it. Maybe I could also make a way for them to laugh again and maybe find some joy. And so I thought, well, what if we turned Vets Against Insanity into a conference? Ooh, that's interesting, you know? And then I thought, well, I don't want to do a conference, right? We don't want to do the same old thing. What if it's a con? I thought, maybe. So I talked to my partner, Kaylin DeWild, the social DVM, the most wonderful, adaptable, so funny. I keep coming to her with crazy ideas and she goes, maybe, you know, that sort of thing. And then I thought, well, you know, let me just put it out there, right? So we put it out there and there was some interest. We put it out to some companies to maybe partner with us. And surprise, surprise, people were like, I think the industry really needs something like this. Mm-hmm. And so the goal is small, right? Regional. The idea is to create connections that people can take back with them afterwards, right? So we're focusing on Colorado veterinarians, but we're also, you know, everybody within driving distance. And it's funny because people are buying tickets, plane tickets to fly here. And I'm like, oh, okay, that works too. But the idea is to create those regional connections, create a safe space where people can come together and share, create a way for regional representatives of businesses, business to business, so that they can connect with these veterinary offices that literally they've been shut out of for several years now. And then, you know, laugh and have fun. Like, I mean, I'm serious. The first night, what we're going to be doing is game night, right? We're obviously going to be providing the game to play, but I'm also encouraging people, you know, if you're not into playing this game, not everybody is. If you want to bring a different board game, go ahead, right? A lot of us are actually gamers and are really missing out on that kind of like that board game connection. There might be a costume contest as well. So that could be a thing. And like, you know, team t-shirts and, you know, feather boas and whatever it is, because what we're really missing right now, we've got the medicine down, right? We're missing the joy. And that's what we want to hold space for, yeah. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes, I absolutely love this. It's really funny because just like 2 seconds before I jumped on this call with you, I was talking to somebody from Georgia, and we were talking about students and the fact that the students don't think that their profession is going to be a lifelong profession, that they have invested all this. And even I had a conversation with Garth, who is the new CEO of AHA, and he said he was talking to a student at Colorado who said, well, I know after 5 years, I'm going to have to find something else to do. And I'm like, I'm horrified by this because I've been in this profession since 1985 and I love it, but it doesn't mean I'm doing the same thing I was doing in 1985. I was a part-time receptionist, for God's sake, but I still have the love for the profession, the interest in all the science of it, which is super cool. But for me, it's the connections with animals, the people who care for animals, the people who love animals and bring them to us, putting all those pieces together so that everybody enjoys the experience of being in a veterinary hospital. And so I think that you have absolutely captured the essence of what is missing here, and that is the fun of practice, because it can be fun. And when we're too focused on the negatives, and we've been very focused on negativity for the last few years, and I'm not saying that we should not shine a light on burnout and compassion fatigue, but we never shined a light on the good stuff, right? Because there is great joy there. We win a lot, and we need to celebrate our wins. And when we start to train our mind to be positive and to look at the good stuff and to understand that our mind is a liar a lot of the time, then we will then know when it starts to tell us this false story to go, you shut up, you know, that's not right. And we train ourselves to stop that in mid diatribe that's going down that rabbit hole. So I absolutely love, love, love that you are bringing the joy back into practice, because I can think about when I was managing hospitals, the silliness, I mean, the nonsense. We shaved a cat. My boss was going bald. We shaved a cat down and I put the pelt on his chair with an ad for Hair Club for Men. And he was a little vain, you know, about this hair thing. So, and then the most hilarious thing was he had the doctors had professional portraits done and we put them up. Well, it was in the early days of Photoshop. So somebody Photoshopped hair in for him. And one of our clients looked at him and said, what the hell's wrong with your head in this picture? So there was always nonsense happening. And when we're so stuffy and we're so work driven and we're so, you know, we need to laugh at some of the crazy stuff that happens, and crazy stuff happens all the time. You know, we just need to pause and look at that stuff and go, this is funny as crap. And we all have gallows humor. We do. If our clients knew the stuff that we said, they would be horrified. It's how you get through it, right? It, the humor, the laughter is what makes you get through it.
Well, and I think, and as you're talking, and you, like my mind is going bloop, 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 bloop. And there's, I think for your audience, there's a couple of things I want to make sure that I want to provide some value, right, to your audience. Like, obviously we're launching this conference. We want you guys to come. It includes food, drink. It's pretty darn cheap and it's awesome. But the thing is that you also have to know is that I love personal development. I love developing veterinarians. I loved practice as well. But what really lights my fire is when I see a veterinarian just transform on the fly, right? Where something lights up in their mind. And then they go on a slightly different trajectory that makes their whole rest of their career slightly different in a more positive way. And so the other thing with the conference that I'm going to be bringing is I'm going to be sprinkling in all sorts of things. I mean, obviously you're going to get talks on infectious disease, integrative medicine, all that stuff. But what I really want to do is help people develop themselves. And so people are going to walk away with the medical knowledge that they need, but there's going to be something different, right? And the thing that we have to remember for your audience right now is that as human beings, our minds are wired to be negative. Like, it's an evolutionarily wired protection mechanism that comes from our ancestors, right? So about 1,000 years ago, or even further, we came out of the caves. We had to look around, you know, is the tribe attacking? Is the lion coming? Am I going to have enough food, right? And so it really benefited our ancestors to be wired negatively because it helped them survive. But that now is an outdated survival mechanism that we unknowingly engage in every single day. Like I did it my whole life. I still do it a lot of the time.
100%. 100%. Right? Yes. Yes.
And so you have to actually go in and rewire that. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of different ways to do it. But if you know that when that voice starts talking, it's just trying to protect you, but it's an outdated mechanism that you don't really need anymore.
Yes.
That makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. And you know, and you can prep yourself for the things that trigger you, for those reactions too. That's the other thing that I was talking to CSR one day, and she actually had managed a practice before, super sharp girl. And she said, Debbie, you know, I'm usually pretty good, but sometimes these clients, they just get to me. And she said, how do you manage that? And I said, well, first of all, remember, it's, you can always say to yourself, it's not about me, it's about whatever else is going on, but that's still hard to do. But I said, I always kind of picture myself like a telephoto lens. And so when I'm in this conversation, I'm there and I'm zoomed in close. But when things start to trigger me, I feel like I'm pulling that lens back. And I'm going to look at that situation from way up here in the sky, and I'm looking down on it. And I'm going, what's actually going on between this person and me? And what are they really saying? What's triggered them? What's going on? You know, I'm diagnosing the conversation. And we're doctors and technicians and, you know, managers, and we are problem solvers. And when we start to look at these triggering situations as a problem to be diagnosed and solved, then you become clinical instead of emotional about it. And that is the offset to the brain limbic response that says, attack. Yeah.
Exactly. It's like recognizing, you know, what your triggers are, and then when the signs that you have become triggered. Like for me, it's very clear. My heart starts to beat faster. I start to sweat. my gut gets really active. I will go negative immediately. There's a lot of different like mental and physiological signs. And then actually having a strategy in place when you notice those signs going on within yourself to calm yourself so that you can stop being cognitively hijacked by your midbrain and bring it back up to your cortical.
The smart brain. Let's let the smart brain back over.
Yes, your prefrontal cortex, your neocortex, all of that gorgeous stuff up there. When we're like in it, that all goes offline.
It's locked right? Out. Exactly right. Yeah. And that little just few seconds of mindfulness breathing. I do this before I go to the doctor and whenever they take my blood pressure, right? And because the white coat syndrome, I really don't have it much, but I know enough to say, okay, now I'm going to calm myself down. Mm-hmm. And I start to do that mindful breathing and intentionally slowing my breaths and just feeling myself relax. And then I take my blood pressure and it's absolutely normal. In fact, it's really good. But, you know, I had a doctor tell me one day, you need to go on blood pressure medicine. I said, no, I don't. And they went, what? First of all, you didn't take it right.
Well, doctor, hello. Technicians know how to do that way better than we do.
The assistant had taken it and she had my arm way too high. My feet were dangling off the table. I said, none of this is right. So she said, I'll take it. And so it was normal. So I, you know, order-wise, defend yourself. Not everybody knows what they're doing, but you can control yourself. And I think that's something that people say, oh, that somebody made me mad. No. You allow yourself to get mad. You can control yourself. And it takes practice. That's the thing. Practice and emotional intelligence and knowledge of what you're talking about. Because when you know this stuff, you can't unknow it, right? And so you can look back on these difficult conversations and say, okay, let me kind of do a, you know, mortality and morbidity on this conversation. Where did it go off the rails? How could I have stopped it? What signals did I miss in the client? Because I really do feel like in a lot of the conversations I'm having with practice team members who dealt with clients who've just been really rough, what did we miss? Mm-hmm. What did we miss beforehand? and not placing blame on the team other than poor training. You know, that I think is a problem. Could we have missed body language? Could we have missed, you know, the clenched fist, the rapid breathing, all those things that we could have stepped into that conversation and thrown out a verbal treat? It's just like the fear-free dog, right? You throw out the treat, throw out the verbal treat.
Yeah.
Hold that situation down.
Well, and it's so funny because we're really good at recognizing the signs of fight, flight, and freeze in every other species, yes. Right? But for some reason, when we see it in another human, we tend to take it personally,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And this comes down to like owning your personal responsibility, your ability to respond in any given set of circumstances. And to understand that when somebody else makes you mad, you've given your power away. Your emotions are in their hands. That is not a good thing to do, right? It's all about making an internal locus of control versus an external locus of control. Because otherwise, then you're just an emotional marionette in the hands of whoever comes along to piss you off. And then you start to form those neural connections in your brain, and they get thicker and thicker until they are a super highway of reactivity and negativity. And that's what I'm seeing a lot of. And so I just want to gently kind of come in and go, hey guys, let's do a retrospective analysis of how this stuff is happening so that we can stop blaming and instead own our part in it. And that comes down to your mental and emotional and inner peace is yours, right?
Right.
And nobody else can touch it. Mm-hmm. And the only time they can touch it is when you let them.
It's when you let them. Well, I was having this online conversation, and at this point in the game, you think I would know better, but I don't. I still get involved in them. But it had something to do with veterinarians requiring a deposit because we had so many no-shows. And I said we were kind of forced to do this because of people's bad behavior. They were calling around five places trying to find a vet, and they never canceled any of the five appointments that they made. And there we were with gaps and animals who needed care. And so this woman kind of came back and said, well, then that means that veterinarians should be paying me for my time when they are late. And instead of being triggered by that, because it's not the first time I've heard that in my lifespan, I just said, you know what, you're exactly right, because respect goes both ways and they should control their schedule better. So here's my question to you, since we have the phones ringing off the hooks and we have, you know, animals that need care and we have people who are not showing up, what is your solution to this problem? Questions are really a good friend of ours if we start to ask questions. And so she actually came back with a great reply and answer. And then we even got to the point where that was collaborative at the end, and she runs a rescue. And I said, you know what, I'll list it on my website along with my entire rescue list. So if we realize that that would be a trigger point for a lot of us when we were accused of wasting people's time by, instead of going, well, you know, there's emergencies and you know, there's this and that. And I'm like, you know what? Sometimes it's poor scheduling on our part too, because everything doesn't take 30 freaking minutes, right? Differentiate your schedule and make a good plan, and don't keep doing the way you've always done it. You can stop it, right? You can stop it just like I stopped it, and then ask the question, push it back onto that person to say, what would you do?
Absolutely. Now, having said that, it is way difficult to engage in this kind of amazing, mindful interaction you're talking about when your resiliency is so low, right? It yes. just, I mean, I've noticed my resiliency, oh my gosh, I'll go from like fine to in a second, you know?
And like everybody's twitchy.
Oh, and like your window of tolerance, it's our window of tolerance right now is very, very small. So the way that veterinary professionals are thinking and feeling makes total sense when you look at it from a 10,000 foot view. But the only way we are going to get out of it is it starts with self-care. Mm-hmm. And yes, I am looking at all of you beautiful veterinary professionals who put everybody else before you. And so many of us are work martyrs, right? Like, I mean, it's something we were conditioned to be. I was conditioned to be that way since I was very little. But the thing is, you cannot pour from an empty cup. So it starts with taking care of you first. And you might be sitting there thinking, I can't do that. I've got all this blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're going to stay stuck, right? You have to make little steps forward. And once you have that place of resiliency and you start to feel fuller, then you can pour into other people and you can get out of your middle, your amygdala and all of that. But it really does start with self-care for yourself first.
Well, you know, you said something about going skiing. And when I was managing hospitals, managing a hospital is pretty stressful. And then when you multiply and you have 11 veterinarians and they're open 24 hours a day, and you're doing mixed animal practice in the shelter, and there's a lot of stuff going on. So self-care for me was painting. I would come home from work. I would go into my garage studio and I would paint. And I painted portraits of animals and portraits of people. And you know, the great thing about the animal portraits is really good at anatomy. So the portraits are very realistic. But it just takes you away from the grind of what you do every day, and it engages the other side of your brain. And it's so restful because you don't have to think about anything. You've got to let your brain take a break from whatever it is you have going on. And that's not to say what you have going on isn't fascinating and interesting, because for me, I am truly a little bit of a workaholic. I love what I do. And my husband's like, oh man, you just been, I wish I loved what I did as much as you do. I do go outside and I dig in the dirt and I plant way too many plants and I spend 2 hours watering every night because I live at the beach and it's 98 degrees. But it takes me out of the office. It takes me away from what I think about all day long, and it puts me into a completely different mindset. I really believe outside is so healthy for us, and we spend too much time inside looking at devices and phones and screens of some sort of, you know, green is really good for your mind.
Absolutely. Getting into nature. I live up here in the mountains, and I have the national forest at my backyard. And I could sit and stare at this computer and be like, blah, 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 you know, never stop. But I actually make myself stop because I know what will happen to my nervous system if I don't. And it's really nice if you're engaging in something that requires your full presence, right? Your full presence, because you could be doing something and then part of your mind is thinking about that case.
Yes.
Or part of your mind is feeling guilty for not working or producing or cleaning something, you know? So doing something and literally giving yourself permission to do that, because it not only benefits you, it benefits everybody around you when you take care of yourself. I remember I actually did neurofeedback therapy like 5 or 6 years ago. And I remember, because I had a traumatized nervous system. I didn't even know I had a traumatized nervous system. And I remember sitting through those first couple of sessions feeling so guilty that I was doing that for myself. Like, where did that come from?
Things that you could be doing, right?
Yes. I could be cleaning or making money, you know, like all this stuff we're conditioned to do. And it took me a while to kind of shed that and realize that I could actually be happier, be healthier, make more money, have more free time if I shed that, this whole mental construct of guilt that we carry around like this massive burden upon our shoulders. So whoever's listening to that right now, realize that guilt is a liar and it's designed to keep you chained to whatever paradigm you're in right now. And there is another way.
Yes. Well, Sarah, this conference sounds super cool. And I love, you know, the other thing I really like that you're doing is the connection in close proximity. I actually read something the other day about friendships, and it says friendship has a great deal to do with proximity. You know, it's really hard to have long distance relationships with people, even though digital has made it easier for that. But I can remember being a manager and we had a very small local managers group, and we would meet once a month, and Novartis was our sponsor and would pay for us to go to lunch. We would talk about stuff. They would bring some of their people in to tell us and teach us some stuff, but we were able to reach out to each other. If we had a dilemma, if we had, you know, if we were out of some product that we needed, we had a community that we could reach out to and say, hey, you know, can I borrow X, Y, and Z? Or do you know anything about this product that somebody wants me to buy? Or hey, this girl said she worked for you. Is she crazy or is she good? Should I hire her or not? And then, so we had a great community and we could run things by each other. And we knew we suffered equally because we knew what it was like to manage big hospitals. And so I think that's such a good idea to be able to have somebody who is going through what you do every single day, who totally understands the language that we speak, and to then be able to say, hey, can I, you know, let's meet for a cup of coffee because here's what happened and I need to talk to somebody about it. And that's fantastic.
Well, and so many of us have so many good ideas and just the connection point, knowing that you're not alone and that there are other people going through the same thing and that they are there for you when you need them. It makes all the difference.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is there's problem solvers because other people have solved these problems and that maybe this is something you just can't see your way out of. I just wrote a blog about old systems, ancient systems that sit into place in hospitals. When we unlock the doors, maybe they were fine, but now they're not efficient anymore, but we're locked into them. And it's aggravating because they're frustrating us and our teams because we're like, why am I doing this clunky thing? But we can't get ourselves out of it. It's part of a great deal of what I do as a consultant is to get people out of their old systems and into better and more efficient ones. But when we realize that other people have solved those problems, maybe, and we say, this is, you know, I can't see my way out of this. To give you a prime example of what I'm talking about, I went into a practice that had been open about 40 years, and the two front desk people had been there 35 of those 40. And the new owner said, Debbie, we can't figure out what in the world is going on every day at 4:00 in the afternoon. This place is insane. There's so many people standing and waiting and people are getting upset and we just don't know what's going on. And I said, well, I'll come and do an observation. And I sat in the lobby and I watched and I noticed that they did about 15 surgeries a day. And everybody who came to check in, these CSRs who had been saying the same thing for 35 years said, come pick them up at 4:00, come pick them up at 4:00 to 15 different clients. And so I looked at them after I watched all this and I said, folks, is there any reason that you could not have somebody come at 3, at 3:15, at 3:30, at 3:45 and 4? And they went, no, but it never occurred to us. That was the bottleneck. But it was the system that had been set up when it was a one doctor practice doing two surgeries a day and it didn't really matter. But now 15 people were being wedged into this small lobby and wondering why in the world they couldn't get the appointments in and the people out and the animals back and forth. I wish everything was that simple to fix, but sometimes you just need outside eyes to see it.
Such a simple solution, but because those people are in it, right? You can't see the forest for the trees.
Yes.
They couldn't see. And so I almost wonder if a lot of the stuff, you know, that we're struggling right now is just because the answer's there, but we just don't see it because we don't have the eyes to see, right? Mm-hmm. That's why what you do is so valuable because so many of us are just stuck. And we keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. Definition of insanity.
Yes.
But like, if you could just tweak one small thing and then you jump into an alternate timeline basically and create something new.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you know, I think that is the advantage that I have of having been into a lot of hospitals and talked to hundreds and hundreds of team members. But I also think that a lot of times veterinarians, practice owners, they're the A students, right? They're supposed to solve all the problems. And there are people who work around you that have solutions, but we don't ask the people around us for help. Mm-hmm. And one of my very favorite TED Talks is how to make toast. And when we start to think about the breaking down to the increments of how do you make toast, we think, oh, you take a piece of bread and stick in the toaster, it pops up. Uh-uh. You have to decide to go to the store. You have to decide what kind of bread. You have to buy the toaster. How long are you going to put the dough in? There is so many little parts to making toast. So if we look at a simple thing like how do we do a spay from beginning to end, from the phone call to the discharge? What are all the little components in between that and everybody's role to play? First of all, it's amazing when people see that there's about 144 different steps to this, but what steps are unnecessary? What steps could somebody else be doing to make you more efficient? And until you lay that out, you don't see it because everybody's too busy doing their 22 steps, right?
Yeah, just because that's how we've always done it doesn't mean that it's the best way. I don't own a veterinary practice, but I've owned restaurants for years. And one of the things that we did when we onboarded new hires is we utilized their kind of outsider, insider perspective. So when we hired them a week later, we would say, what do you see that's working well? What is something that you think could work better? And then we ask them again, like 3 months later, and they have this fresh pair of eyes that the people who have been there forever just didn't see, right? Yeah. So that's another good trick.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen hospitals who put something that they use 50 times a day in an inconvenient drawer. Why? Because somebody stuck it there one day and it's always been there. But you use it 50 times a day while you sit on the counter. I mean, that kind of stuff. But it is that, you're right, fresh perspective of new hires coming in going, well, you know what? This looks a little uncomfortable. I mean, it's a system that doesn't work well. What if we just did this one thing? And sometimes the tweaks are so simple, but they make life so much better. And considering the fact that we are shorthanded, looking at some of the studies that say, we're not going to have enough veterinarians, we can't graduate them fast enough to have enough veterinarians, then what are we going to do? Well, we've got to fix the systems. We've got to use humans for the things that are important for humans to do. That is the hands-on medicine and the relationship building with humans. But when we have to use technology to leverage all the other stuff, you know, the stuff that we don't have to have a hand in, so that we can take that pressure off.
Absolutely. I almost think like veterinary clinics are a metaphor for life.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Put your systems in place, right? All your systems in place and leverage what you don't need to do to people who enjoy doing it, for one thing. That's going back to the technician. Leverage your technicians. They went to school to do this stuff. They don't want to be glorified dog holders. They want to be nursing those animals and doing those things. They want to do all the things, right? Do all the things.
Yeah, it would be amazing if veterinary technicians were not considering it as a ladder career to something else, but that they had opportunity to continue to grow and climb and do new things. And I know there's, you know, like the veterinary nurse initiative and things like that that are out there that are very challenging to our old paradigms, but it makes me think of the show Call the Midwife. Did you ever see that?
See that one.
Call the Midwife is on PBS, I think. It's a wonderful show that talks about how midwives were used in the 1950s in England when doctors were very, very scarce. And so there'd be one doctor for a, you know, kind of a low income area. And then there'd probably be like, you know, 7 or 8 midwives who would handle most of the births. And then if something went south, then you call the doctor, right? And that was very challenging to the human medicine industry at the time, right? Because they were like, no, you have to have a doctor. But the circumstances forced the hands. And so it'll be interesting to see how this all evolves in the next couple of years, because I do believe that we are going to have to really shift what our roles are, make sure we have our labeling correct, and then really provide areas for these people who really want to provide more and do more within veterinary medicine so that they are supervised correctly, you know, the medicine is done correctly. And frankly, I'm excited. I'm excited.
I think years and years ago, we had somebody come and speak to the Vet Partners group, and it was about, she's a civics professor at Harvard, and she was talking about disruptions. And in every great disruption, there has been an outcome that was positive for civilization. So if you think about going back to, you know, even the American and French Revolution, then there was a great positive outcome. And then the Civil War, then there's outcome. And then the Civil Rights Movement, and then there's positive outcome. And so we've just gone and probably are still on the tail end of a great disruption.
Huge
disruption, probably the biggest one in our lifetime. I mean, I laughed and said I was around in 1968 when we had the last pandemic, and I said we didn't do anything but have Woodstock in the middle of it. So, but we didn't know, you know, we didn't have any digital media or the press telling us how the death numbers. We just watched people die in Vietnam. That was our death numbers. It wasn't from the pandemic. So, you know, every time humans survive, that's sort of the whole story of this podcast is the bend. Humans survive. Mm-hmm. We figure out a way. We are still here hundreds of thousands of years after we started. Mm-hmm. And we will figure out a way, and it will be incredibly uncomfortable.
Yes.
Get it done. And some of us will go kicking and screaming into the new thing, and some of us won't, and some of us won't make it, but that's how it works. And so our goal is to shine the light on people who are interested in a path of resilience and interested in change and interested in being the change makers, not just being okay with change, but thinking outside the box and pushing the envelope and making a difference. And that's what Sarah Wooten does. So thank you, Sarah, for pushing the envelope.
Absolutely. So I want to leave everybody with like one more thing, one more little thing from me to you. So I look at 2020 as just terrible, so hard. But what I've been taught to do is look at these things that look really, really bad, and then understand that maybe I'm just looking at the wrapping paper, right? Maybe I'm just looking at really ugly wrapping paper. And if I peel it away, then inside maybe there's a gift for me, right? And so another thing I've been taught, instead of asking, why me? Why is this happening? You know, those kind of questions, which at the end of the day are really disempowering. Mm-hmm. I've been taught to ask, what good is here that I presently cannot see?
Oh, I love that. You know, I love that. And I don't, I will second that, because I was a cancer survivor. I still am, excuse me. I got cancer at 46 years old. And rarely will you find a cancer survivor who doesn't say, it actually was a good thing, mm-hmm. because of the things I learned from it. Mm-hmm. And I learned to probably appreciate life more. I learned to appreciate the people and the support around me more, mm-hmm. because there were so many people who stepped up that I had no idea even cared, but it was kind of an amazing thing. And it was a gift and a blessing. I mean, it was hard. I don't want to do it again. I will tell you that. I don't want to do that, but wow. You know, looking back on it. So every time there's a hard thing, the years of perspective looking back on it is the gift. And what did I learn from the gift? So that's fantastic. I don't like the wrapping paper. I don't want to do the wrapping paper.
There are none that do.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Well, Sarah, tell us about the conference dates. How can people go? All the good stuff.
So it's coming up, man. It's October 21st through 23rd. So it's meant for all you procrastinators out there. And we are in Colorado, and it is a licensing year. So if you need hours, we got you. The website is at www.vetsagainstinsanitycon.com. You can also just go to the regular Vets Against Insanity website, and you can purchase your ticket there. It's a ticket. It's not a registration. And you can learn all about the speakers, the events, and everything that we're doing.
Well, it sounds exciting and fun and educational and different. Shake it up. Shake it up. All right. Well, thanks, Sarah. Thanks for being you and being willing to jump in the fire here with a little insanity, but that's what we need. You know, we need to shake it up and be a little insane. So thank you all very much for listening today. And I hope you take advantage of the conference and the information that Sarah brings to our world of Vet Med. And if you want to have some fun, that's against insanity with your team. Don't play with your family. They won't get it. They won't get it at all. But your team absolutely will have a blast with it. Oh, man. Thank you again for listening. This has been today's episode of The Bend.